Brought to you by the Capital One Saver Card. With Saver, you earn unlimited 3% cash back on dining, entertainment, and at grocery stores. That's unlimited cash back on ordering takeout from home, or unlimited cash back on tickets to concerts and games. So grab a bite, grab a seat, and earn unlimited 3% cash back with the Saver Card. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Tim.
I'm Chris.
And on today's show, we have a return guest, Mr. Ben Fraternelli. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Ben.
What's up, everybody? Woo! Cue that intro music.
Let's go. Do.
Yeah. Love it.
Oh my God, amazing. So, Ben, we've got some exciting stuff you want to share with everybody. But before we get into it, do you mind, for listeners who may not know you, just giving us a background on yourself and how you got into photography?
Absolutely. Well, my name is Ben Fraternelli. I am the host of In an Instant, which is a YouTube channel that's all about instant film, really at this point, more broadly, film photography. And it's newfound prevalence worldwide, and all the changes that happen in the industry, the new products that come out, the new methods people come up with to shoot, the stuff that I'm doing artistically and wanting to spread that joy with the world. Mm. And it's 6 years running. As you
wow.
mentioned, I'm a return guest. And the last time I was on the show was April 2020.
Yeah.
Which...
Dark times.
That's a long time
dark,
ago.
Dark times.
It's almost dark to think of how long ago that was.
Yeah.
But much has happened since then. I got married. I have a dog now who's had a very long corgi. a lot of adventure. The channel has grown so much.
Yeah.
I mean, back then it was, we were in lockdown mode and,
right.
you know, there was all the limitations that go along with that. And since then I've taken the channel around the world. The adventure continues.
Dude, I'll never forget like sitting on my sofa in the depths of the pandemic and recovering from like a crazy diabetic almost death. And here comes you on my little phone while I'm laying there. And it's like, oh my God, this guy's actually doing it. Like he's doing it. He is doing it. And your channel still like your theme song hits this nostalgia in my mind where I'm like, man, unemployment money. And
that stimmy check.
It's also like anytime there's something new, I'm like, what's Ben's
review? Yeah, what's
Ben
gotta say?
Like,
what's he saying?
What's the realness of it? So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Can you take us back even further? When did the photography, because you kind of exploded on the scene at that time. It was just like, Timothy was like, this new guy, Ben, like this channel. I'm like, what? Where did he come from?
I was pumped.
So take us back a little bit further. When did you get bit by the bug, as they say?
Yes, I was bit early and often due to having a family of artists that I grew up around. My mother's graphic designer, her mom worked in graphic design. My grandfather was hand illustrator. The whole family used cameras all the time. Mm. I was born surrounded by Polaroids and 35 millimeter cameras and, you know, what have you. By age four, I know at least by age four, I'd taken my first Polaroid because I have a lot of these old Polaroids that I've looked through.
Oh my God.
Absolutely crazy. Some horrible imagery, but the fact that like they are from that time and from my little hands.
Yeah.
And my much bigger hands now holding them. It's like time travel to look at those things.
Oh,
so
man.
I was really raised in it, but I definitely didn't have like an artistic grasp for a few years. By the time I was in middle school, I was really digging into photography as a result of covering a professional football league, which called the AFL.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at the time, my friend Jeff and I, we just love like really digging in really way too deep on things. And we were like, we should make some playing cards to hand out to the players after the game. And we would look on Getty Images and stuff and try to pull images from online. And we were like, these kind of suck.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe we should take pictures at the games and use those for the cards. And then from there, I was, you know, making these cards and started to make a website and started to blog and started to podcast and started to do all these multimedia things. And I was like 13 years old, but it was almost like going through the grindhouse of trying to figure out how to do all these things without any formal education. And so that was sort of my introduction to just holding a camera and trying to do something good with it. But nothing I did was particularly good until probably college, at which point I sort of realized that is really what I wanted to do. I dropped out of my major of journalism, which I thought I wanted to do, but I realized I just like taking photos and shooting videos. Okay. I really love grammar that much. I can pick up grammar just from reading. I don't really need to learn about it, especially for video production. So through just doing, I picked up the skills. And after graduating, I got a job at a production company, which allotted me, you know, incredible resources to sort of just learn by doing. And I was given a lot of liberty back then. This was sort of early on in the notion of like companies making content for just to promote themselves. And my boss at the time was like, just do that. Do whatever you want. Just come in here and write something and shoot it. And
come on.
And the whole staff was supporting me to do it. And I was shocked and awed that I was getting all that support. And it was definitely like my film school was just doing at a production company and getting reps. And then eventually I went freelance, and that's kind of where I am today. I'm still doing freelance. And then in an instant happened to me. I was helpless. Once I realized my obsession with Polaroid had bubbled past simply enjoying it, I suddenly had to like do something with it.
Yeah.
And knowing I had a studio and cameras and microphones, I was like, well, I should just hit record, try to do something, make something interesting.
Love it.
And in an instant was born.
I love it.
I love the Polaroid Now story too. Didn't you like cop one at a Target like pre-release? And then, oh man,
that was... Yeah, essential to the launch of In an Instant. It's sort of the origin story. I had released, I had first filmed several episodes in 2019, and I'd done nothing with them. I think I shot like 12 episodes.
Oh my God.
That I just sat on. I kind of wanted to like practice, make sure I was doing the graphics that I wanted to do, give it a uniform look so that the moment I hit publish, it was this like realized thing, which I think is partially what helped me catch on so quickly. It was like,
totally.
I love Matt Day and I'm in love with Matt Day, but his first videos are him in sitting in a corner with a GoPro.
Yeah.
And like you can feel how he was figuring it out.
Yeah.
I wanted to kind of come out ready to go.
Yes.
Well, you know, you're watching episode one, you're like, what is this? Like, I wanted to
that's your reaction that it that happened. Exactly.
Yeah. And so I published the first two episodes, and this is in early March 2020, so this is where things were about to, you know, nosedive in society. But I'd seen a post on Reddit that was something called a Polaroid Now in Target. And I was like, what the hell is that? First of all, the company was called Polaroid Originals at the time. So this was new branding.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And they had only released one steps at the time, and this was called the Now. People on Reddit were freaking out. They're like, something big is coming. Clearly, this is an accident.
Yeah, you remember that?
They haven't announced anything. And so I was with my cousin and my wife, future wife, Lauren, and we, you know, I just dragged them to Target. I was like, guys, I saw this post on Reddit. We got to take a chance here. I just started this channel. Imagine the scoop of the century.
Yeah.
Getting to make a video about something that's not out yet. And I went to Target. I went to the guy in the electronics section. He was kind of like a dopey guy, very friendly guy. And I was like, I know you got this camera back there, dude. Like, just let me just check out the computer. He turns the computer around. He let me type into their inventory.
No way.
He's like, oh, wait, we do have this. That's so weird. I've never heard of this. He disappears, comes back. Somehow the UPC code is working. He sells me this camera that isn't going to come out for another 3 weeks.
I love it.
And I just get to work really quick. In like 4 or 5 days, I make a video, publish it. I'm getting tons of views because no one knows what the hell this is. And it's like, whoa. You know, this, first of all, what is this channel? Second of all, what is this camera? Third of all, the company is rebranded suddenly. And within like 2 hours, I had an email in my inbox from an @Polaroid email address.
Yep.
From someone named Mildred at the time, who now works elsewhere. But she was like, Ben, you love the video. Great job on the video. However,
take it down.
Can you take it down? Can you take this down right now? Which was a very kind way to phrase that, because looking back on it, it was a very like, it wasn't a very like kind thing to do, like, you know, blow a Polaroid spot like that. But I was trying to do what I could at the time. And they were very nice about it. They were like, we will tell you the minute you're allowed to upload this.
Oh, wow.
You know, we'll give you the PR schedule. And it roped me into this relationship with Polaroid within 2 weeks of this channel. Like, it really did just kick off like I couldn't have imagined. And then from then on, I had a great relationship with Polaroid. And since we last spoke on the podcast, I can't believe this happened since then. But they invited me out to the Netherlands.
Wild.
Yep.
Wild.
And I got this private factory tour that they hired for me, a documentary filmmaker from England, to come and like collaborate with me on it.
Wow.
And I meet this guy in the lobby of this hotel in Enschede, which is really sort of an out there town in the Netherlands. It's not near Amsterdam at all. We drove there in the middle of the night. I had no idea where I was. It was very disorienting. Whoa. And I'm meeting this British guy and he's like, hey, I'm your guy today. I'm like, this is like the biggest day of my life. Are you ready to do this?
Man.
And we shot this really amazing documentary just about the factory and walking around the factory and getting this like firsthand look at it. And I felt like at the time, this was in 2023, that was sort of like the pinnacle of what I could possibly do with this. Like when I launched the channel, I was thinking, what's the most amazing thing I could do? Oh, go to the factory, find where the sausage is made.
Yeah.
See what the sausage smells like. And I felt like from then on, I was sort of riding on a wave. Like that was sort of the peak. And I've just been sort of riding on it ever since.
Oh my gosh.
Honestly.
Man, I love that. I probably watched that whole series of videos in that time so many times because I love living through you. You're such a great storyteller and like the way you shoot things, and it's always just top notch. I'm a number one fan here.
Oh, I'm a fan. I should just stop down for a second here and just once again reiterate how much I love and am in love with you guys.
This podcast
was such an important part of my growth and sort of entrance into the community and sort of understanding what the community even was and, you know, who all the people were that were surrounding the nucleus. And Analog Talk has always felt like a collecting point, like a point where everyone meets and they get their little feature.
That's
and
so
it's
nice.
It's amazing to be back.
Thanks,
on the
Ben.
Show.
Yeah. And we're excited for all the, you know, that, I mean, like we said, the channel has grown exponentially and you deserve every minute of all of the things that come your way. But what else can we expect from the channel? Anything you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah. Well, as it turns out, the Netherlands was not really the end point. I thought that was really the zenith, and it was in many ways. But since then, I've continued traveling the world and exploring the various crevices of this industry. And it took me to China recently, and that's sort of been this whirlwind, many months of work on a documentary that I made out there, exploring the industry out there, which is largely sort of unknown.
Yeah.
I mean, China is fairly closed off as a country in terms of its internet. The citizens don't have access to Western internet. And so we don't really hear from that many Chinese people, but we do get their products trickling out every now and then. We get film stocks that will randomly come out of China, or products or accessories. And like, I always wondered, where the hell are these things coming from? There's like there must be a whole world over there that I haven't seen before. So right now I'm currently releasing a 3-part series. Part 3 is coming out very soon. All about that. The industry, the community, sort of this unseen world that I was deeply curious about and now feel very connected to.
How did that even, I mean, how? Like what? Because this is just, it's, when it came out, I didn't catch any, I don't know if you did any teasers lining up to,
I'm not really.
I'm not on social media like I used to be, but like one day I just opened YouTube and there's part 1 and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
How did you, I mean, did someone reach out to you? What's the, like, how did this even happen? How did it happen?
Yeah, it's a very strange story because the person who invited me out there is like me, a little strange himself.
Love it.
So at Policon NYC last year, I had John Reuter on a live episode. And John Reuter is the keeper of the 20x24 Polaroid format, which for those who don't know, was a really important film format for Polaroid, the company. In the late 70s, they developed these gigantic cameras. They made very few of them. There were only 6 total in the world.
Right.
And these cameras, because this is a nerdy show, I can explain this in detail, which is very exciting. So the camera has, it's a bellows camera, but the rear standard has a machine inside it that has gigantic rollers like a normal Polaroid camera would have.
Wow.
And it has a positive and a negative that load separately in this thing. And they pull this giant sheet, this giant negative down through the camera. They expose it. And then they hand place pods in the camera. And they make these gigantic Polaroids with it. And for Polaroid back then, back in the 70s and 80s, this was like a marquee artistic format. This was something they wanted Andy Warhol to be using. Mm-hmm. They wanted to put this in any famous artist's hands so that they could make work with it. And Polaroid would own, I think, 50% of it, and the artist would own half of it. And Polaroid basically created this like large catalog of imagery using these cameras. And the person that was operating the camera, almost unequivocally and across the board, was this guy, John Reuter.
Wow.
And when Polaroid was nosediving in the 2000s and they were going bankrupt, he saw the writing on the wall, and he saw that this really important historical format that's been used to document presidents. I mean, many presidential portraits have been taken on it. You know, this important thing and his whole life was at risk. And he acted quickly. He purchased as much raw material as he could from Polaroid, where he worked, and basically split out and made his own company, the 20 by 24 studio. And it's still open today.
Wow.
Using that same material.
Crazy.
From 2008. And John had been certain. I'm telling you this long story. I hope people like this.
No, it's
John was
I'm
certain,
like,
was certain.
Yeah.
He was certain by now that the film would be dead. In fact, there was like an article in 2015 that's like John Reuter mourns the potential passing of his film because, you know, this is old stuff and the pod chemistry was about to be, you know, crust. So thanks to several retired Polaroid chemists, they were able to reawaken the chemistry, and John's whole 20 by 24 project has had a life extension that no one expected.
What?
So anyway. Fast forward
That's
to Polaroid, I see.
Yeah.
So wait, isn't it like integral film now? Like, didn't they kind of?
Well, yes, that's actually
something.
An interesting side quest that occurred. So Polaroid, again, this format had not been made anymore, and the current Polaroid company doesn't have the technology to make a peel apart product, which is what the 20 by 24 was.
I just wept.
However, however, Polaroid, I think in the year 2024. Because they were like, ooh, this is an interesting 20 by 24, 2024. They had an idea that what if we tried to make some of this stuff with the new chemistry and the new materials? We give it to John, we give it to Hattie, who is their in-house Polaroid photographer, and we send these two around the world and they can do like a project with it and we'll document that. And so John, who, again, he thought by this point he'd be sitting in a chair somewhere lamenting the days gone by.
Yeah.
Instead, he's in Italy sitting on top of a camera in the back of a pickup truck.
God.
And he's shooting a documentary with new stuff. So Polaroid has themselves taken on a new interest in this. That's sort of a temporary project, however, and it's not really like commercially used in any way.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting footnote to this story. So John's on the podcast or the show. After we wrap, I'm just chit-chatting with him. I'm like, so what's going on? You traveling the world? That's insane. And he said, yeah, not only that, but I was recently in China and there's this guy out there and he commissioned a brand new camera. And I'm like, why would he do that? The film's not like made anymore.
Yeah.
And he said, well, you know, we have this material. We were able to supply him. You know, it took years to make the camera and get it up and running. It took almost 4 years to build the camera due to COVID and all these delays.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just this crazy guy out there doing this. And I thought, that's really amazing. I would love to meet that guy one day, figuring that's not going to happen in 6 months. So anyway, about 2 weeks after that, this guy, Jesse Lin, who lives in Shanghai and owns this camera and this film, he sent me this email. And it was like, hey, Ben, like, I saw John was on your show. I've been watching in an instant for years. I feel like we have this like kindred connection. There's something special here. Like, we really need to connect, at least talk, download WeChat, this Chinese app that we can talk on. And one day I would love to invite you out to Shanghai. At the time, Jesse did not know that I'm the kind of person who, if I'm invited to some.
You're like, that's an invite.
Bags are already like, packed.
Say less. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm already packing.
Yes.
I quickly figured out the logistics of how you could even do that. It's not that easy to go to China.
I didn't think so.
Like, yeah, it's you have to get like a 10-year visa if you're there for more than 48 hours. It's very like strict, the procedure. I was nervous that I was going to get like rejected, and I went to the embassy, and it was a very like, okay, I'm staring forward. I don't want to get rejected. Like, we're right almost at the finish line. And I got approved. And yeah, within 6 months of this email, I was there in China, which was really quite something.
Wow.
Man, it's just crazy that it's so shut off. That we don't get to see them. They don't get to see us. You know, it's
How did he find your channel?
Well, there are ways of accessing the internet, because Hong Kong, which is technically part of China now, but was previously quote unquote owned by England, had sort of established an independent government there that was sort of playing by its own rules. So if you're in mainland China and you're using Hong Kong's internet through like a VPN or something, you actually can access the internet. Not that many people do it because it's obviously discouraged. And I don't know if you really get punished badly for doing that, but it's definitely not like a cool thing to do.
Right.
But Jesse being obsessed with Polaroid and constantly in contact with John in the US, I think wanted some sort of through line to be able to access the internet. And so he found it in an instant. And once I got on Chinese social media, which now I'm on, this app Red Note, which is like their Instagram, I saw that all of the in an instant videos I've like almost ever made are on Chinese social media, translated into Chinese.
No way.
And I was like, okay, so my stuff is out here.
You're huge in China.
Yeah, Jesse was like, you're big here. Trust me.
Wow.
Imagine that's true. But,
oh, man.
But it was a really interesting and sort of scary experience initially. Like, you know, there's all these preconceived notions about China's relationship with the U.S. and what they could possibly think of us, and the fact that they don't have access to our social media. Like, do they know what we're up to over here?
Right.
Is it really strict over there? I don't know. I had a lot of questions. I just didn't know what I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a little bit of trepidation. But I also just threw myself in fully. I dragged this guy with me, Henry Tong, who is currently filming a documentary about just the resurgence of film photography. And I'm in the documentary. And one day while we were shooting for his documentary, I was like, Henry, before you go, do you want to go to China?
Yeah.
Is there any chance you'd want to go to China with me? Like, I'm going, and I'm going alone. And you are obviously into this. I didn't realize he also is Chinese.
Yeah.
And he was like, after 12 hours of thinking about it, he said, all right, let's do this.
Man.
Let's do it. And so thankfully I had one other person who could speak English that was like in it with me.
Yeah.
Cause when we arrived, it was like really like entering through like a grinder, like a meat grinder. We were immediately being put in front of tons of people.
Wow.
We were told we were being like watched by the government.
Oh my
and
God.
I was like, that sounds really scary. And they're like, no, in a good way. Like they're excited you're here. I'm like, okay, sure.
Holy cow.
We were housed in a apartment building that was brand new, and this guy from Malaysia who was like basically the landlord had only known this guy Jesse for like 2 weeks, and for some reason hosted us there. So we had this like beautiful apartment that we were staying in for free, and we just went on a series every day. We were there for 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Every day we went on some like backbreaking adventure.
Yeah.
Where
you
we
have
would meet
to.
Like
yeah.
five people a day, driving all around the cities, meeting artists, meeting Polaroid China, meeting unbelievable variety of people, and with the notion that eventually this will somehow be in an instant series. Like a collection of people that I could only do very limited research on because there's no information about them in the US.
Right.
I just had to take that leap of faith and learn what I could and go out there and just wing it. And somehow I think it's turned into one of my favorite production things that I've ever done.
Amazing.
Certainly favorite experiences I've ever had.
Dude, it's so good. I mean, I've watched both episodes and I got so much out of both of them too. Like it's crazy. Like things that kind of, I wouldn't say shocked me, but things I was just like, oh wow, that's crazy that film prices, like camera prices and stuff, that it's not much, you said it was like not much different than, you know, what you're paying for stuff here. And just that, you know, you think a world that's shut off from our world, you know, as an American, we're the center of the world and everything is around us and whatnot. But it did, you know, I was thinking, oh man, Ben in China, it's going to be like,
like a fish out of water or something?
Well, no, just like the people you'd run into were, what's the word I'm looking for? It's when it's secluded people in the middle of nowhere you know, they don't know what the trends and all that stuff. But the people that you were interviewing and hanging out with, they just look like us. You know what I mean? Like hip and on top of what's going on. And it's like, wow, okay, well, I guess the world does turn, doesn't it?
Yeah. It was a big like wake up call. I mean, I have to say I had some of the same preconceived notions. Like, but once I got there, and there were some weird little moments that felt so comfortable. Like when we got to Jesse's studio, which is this huge studio, he's got the 20x24 there. He's got like several different sites, seamless areas. There's like all different places to shoot. And just like seeing several boxes of Polaroid 8x10, I was like, okay, I'm home. Like, I don't have to worry.
I mean, it just goes, it's like what connects us all
universal
in this community is like the love of photography, and like to be in such a different place that we're used to and connecting over the same nerdy stuff. It's like, it's always the best feeling, no matter who we're nerding out with, you know? It's like, you are one of us. Like, yes, like it's the best.
Totally. One of the first people I met, the only words he knew in English were NYPD and TPX, which is the name of a Polaroid transparency film. All we just kept going, we go NYPD, TPX.
Yes.
We just scream that at each other while we were shooting. Like, and like, it didn't matter. That's all we knew how to say. We were going crazy over shooting like weird formats, and you, it all comes from the same place within you. Like that feeling and that thing that we're loving so much about film photography is this like core universal feeling of like wanting tangibility, wanting experiences, wanting to be in touch with something real. And like, that's true in China. It's true in the US. It's true in India. It's something that was like a really big wake up call for me and made the experience so much more like joyous, because everyone I was put in front of, even if they weren't like a Polaroid person, they were somewhat involved in the arts or something like that. And that was just this core thing that we can always share, even if it's like hard to speak a single word to each other.
Wow.
Nothing better, I swear.
Man, did you take a lot of cameras with you when you went, or what were you able to pack? Like, was it?
Oh, yeah. Good question.
What was that all about?
Yeah. That's a great question. I was very nervous about that. In fact, I was nervous about even having the footage. These were like all the things. Yeah. All the things I was thinking about were like, how censored is it going to be? Am I going to be able to leave the country with the footage I shot? I left a hard drive there, just in case.
Like, oh, okay.
I was
smart.
Oh my god.
Taken down or something.
Yeah.
So we like backed up everything, left one locally. Henry took one. I took one. We didn't know it was going to happen. The funniest thing about China was, I think you are sort of under surveillance in many ways at all times, but you don't really feel like you are. And I never felt pressured or like I was being really like followed or that anyone was even going to do that. By the time I was leaving China, I bought an additional suitcase, filled it with a ton of stuff. Was just like, all right, screw it. No one's going to fleece me down.
These people
don't care what I have in my bag. Like, even hand checking film on the subway, which was really stressing me out, because you got to hand check every time you're taking a train there.
Oh,
really?
They were even just chill with doing that. Like, so I did try to pack light initially under those concerns. I brought a Hasselblad, which I didn't take a single frame with, because on day two, I bought a Chinese camera and decided to entrust my entire livelihood to it. I brought a point and shoot. I'm an Olympus stylus, because I thought it'd be fun to do some like point and shoot stuff in China, just like raw.
Yep.
I took an I2 and an SX70, and I was given an SX70 when I got there.
Damn.
By this guy, Leo, the guy that only knew the words NYPD and TPX. He handed me an SX70 on day two, and I was like, oh, is this like, hey, I'm going to try this? He's like, no, it's for you. I was like,
wow.
It was this Chinese modified version of the SX70 that has like a new computer inside it, basically. So I ended up accruing cameras.
Amazing.
I brought one of the main things I was doing out there, other than making videos, was taking like large format portraits of everyone we met. In lieu of bringing an 8x10, which seemed ridiculous, a Chinese company kindly like lent us one. And so we had like a nice red bellowed. It looked a lot like my Intrepid. I felt very comfortable with it. But I did bring my lenses. So I brought my 300mm lens and my 210 lens. And I brought them just in the lens board I normally use. Somehow it worked on the Chinese camera. It was just one of those things.
Beautiful.
So I had my little kit. I brought a Canon R5 as well. to like film with. And so it was pretty, I mean, that sounds like a lot of cameras, but you know, if you're a film photographer listening to this, you know, the tendency we all have of breaking our spines with bags filled with heavy stuff. And I tried my best not to do that, but in the end, I fell prey to my own vices. I bought like two cameras there. I bought film there. My film bag was overflowing. I got, did you say what kind?
Yeah. What'd you buy? What camera?
So I got a Seagull, which is, Seagull is a state-owned camera company. So they were founded when China basically restarted their government in the 50s and became a new country, the People's Republic of China, with a new government and everything. And that government wanted to catch up with the world and was like, we need factories. We need to make camera factories. We need to make car factories. We need to basically start up industry because they didn't really have that much industry in China. So they founded this company that was called Shanghai Camera. Now it became Seagull Camera. And I knew that kind of, like, I sort of knew that history. Yeah. And I was like, I need a Seagull. Like, I'm going to get anything. I want a Seagull because it's so classic. And so on day two, we went to this camera market. And I bought a Seagull immediately. And without testing it or really knowing if it worked, I looked the guy who sold it to me in the eyes. And I was like, if this doesn't work, you're screwing me, dude. Like, I'm about to use the hell out of this thing. And if it's not working, I'm going to be back right before I leave. And I'm going to do something fine to you that's not going to be bad. So I bought that. And that was only like, you know, $60 or something. It was really cheap. But it's like a 75mm f3.5 lens. Didn't really know optically like what it would do, but when I got the photos back, it like blew my ass off.
Oh,
like
I
couldn't believe the quality of the pictures. It was truly stunning. And I'm so glad that I did that stupid thing and trusted it. I also bought a Phoenix camera because we met this guy who worked at the Phoenix factory. That was another state-owned factory. And he was like, this is the first camera we ever made. It's a great collector's item. So I got one of those. And then throughout China, I got a Labubu. Polaroid accessories. I was stunned at the amount of Polaroid stores and Polaroid film and camera stores. It's just such a big deal there in a way that you wouldn't expect. And one of the most interesting days that I had there was the only thing that I personally planned that Jesse didn't plan was right before I left, I emailed Polaroid and I was like, hey, I'm going to China. It sounds like it's kind of hard to get film there, actually. Like, Jesse was like, it's out of stock everywhere. We're having trouble finding it. So I was like, is there any way? I know there's an office out there that's like kind of new. Can they reserve some film for me? That would be like huge. And they were like, yeah, not only that, but they would love to like meet you and hang out. I organized this like Polaroid meetup where I met with the new office. They only have three employees, but these three people are in charge of distributing and making people aware of Polaroid in China, which if you like map China onto the US, they're essentially the same size. So imagine this gigantic country that hasn't really had access to Polaroid until kind of recently. You've got three people in Shanghai who are in charge of marketing it, at one of which travels almost every day and is doing 100 events per year. Going to like shops and dark rooms and other, you know, stores, and basically hosting Polaroid events, bringing film, letting people like shoot with the cameras, telling them how they work. I mean, they are really putting in the effort.
Incredible. Wow.
And so that was one of my favorite days because they invited a bunch of people out to come see me and this guy, Super Tomato, who is an influencer out there. And so me and Super Tomato were meeting, and it was this like meeting of the minds, the Polaroid minds. And Super Tomato shoots ancient Chinese gardens. I shoot ancient American landmarks.
Yeah.
And we were sort of like talking about that and how we use Polaroid as like a preservation method. And there were like, I don't know, 30 young people there that were just popping shots with the Polaroid now. And taking bangers, like double exposures. I'm like, you guys are unbelievable at this. This is so cool. And the younger people there, I felt so comfortable with. Right before I left, I had asked Jesse, how sensitive are people to talking about Chinese history? Because China has a very complicated history and it's gone through a lot of phases. Yeah. And I wasn't really sure what latitude I had to like talk shop about that stuff. I didn't know how censored people were. And he's like, anyone born after 1990 is going to be an open book. They are fairly westernized as far as their consumption of media, their perspective on the world and stuff. Anyone born before then, you might end up running into some people who suddenly stop talking.
Right.
So at this Polaroid event, I was like sitting on the curb with these kids, just like speaking however much English I could with them about their lives. And it just felt like, wow, this is, we really are somos uno, as we used to say in Spanish class. We really are one.
Yeah.
It was really a trip, and it filled my heart with such joy. Like,
I bet.
I felt I'm here for this reason. Like, now I'm actually making these real human connections a whole world over with people that I would never, ever, ever have interacted with before. And it was really special.
Man, that's pretty incredible, Ben, if you really think about this, you know, 2019, where you're like, do I even put these out? Or like, what do I do with these videos? And now you're over like, I mean, it's really like, if we have these moments in life, like I've kind of in that, I mean, it's still related to photography, but like I'm working a unit, still photographer now in the union. And I'm like having these, like, I'm on a union job and I'm like, I'm going to cry on set because like, you know, like what is life? Like it's just
exactly.
Like, and to hear you like tell these stories with such like joy, and that brings us joy. And we're, you know, we're definitely glad to share, you know, with our listeners, like the journey, man, it's been incredible.
Yeah, it's so funny. I listened to the first episode that I was on in 2020 the other day, because I was like, who was this guy that was on the show back then? And just, it was weirdly not cringe to me. Usually when I listen to like my previous self, I'm like, God, that guy was such a punk. But like, I didn't know what things would become, but I could sense then in hearing myself that I was like, wanted to do something like
ready,
this, that like
ready.
What I was craving was expanding so far beyond the online community, like in an instant, like really grew through COVID, which was a completely isolated moment. And a huge reason for its growth was because people were able to have sort of parasocial online relationships through YouTubers and through Instagram people. And that was huge back then. Like it saved all of us, I feel like.
Yeah.
But then this moment where I finally could like break out of the studio. And the first, one of the first things I did, Chris, was I came to LA. That was the first thing I did once I got my vaccine, was when I came out and visited you out there.
Oh, yeah. We went. Yeah.
And that was like, you know, when you pull the cork out of the thing and it starts gushing out.
Yeah.
From then on, I never stopped and I just kept traveling. I mean, earlier this last year, another thing I'm like proud slash happy that I leap of faith I took was going to Albuquerque to see what Ethan Moses's whole world is like over there. Camera Dactyl, who, for those who don't know, has, you know, made a 20x24 camera out of wood, has mastered the RA4 reversal process, is a camera builder, maker, is always up to something crazy. Similar to Chinese Jesse, just one day was like, hey, Ben, can you come to Albuquerque? I just have to show you something. I don't think I even want to tell you what it is until you get here. And I didn't even know what I was doing. I just pulled up one day and we started making a video. And I realized that like my initial impulse to be a journalist maybe is sort of coming back up in some ways.
Dude, yeah. You're killing it.
I'm realizing
on that. Yep.
I love being on like the front lines of the weirdness and the oddities and the human beings of this industry. And I realize that like that is the best use of my channel. I mean, I love doing reviews and stuff like that and sitting down and talking shop about gear and what have you. But the actual human interaction and the discovery process, and I keep using the word weird, but it's weird what everyone's doing out there. I will like never get bored exploring it. And so, yeah, it's just funny to look back on that show and not knowing what was going to come next. But many countries later and trips around the U.S. later, here we are.
Back
on Analog Talk.
Back
Love
on,
it.
Man, the Camera Dactyl video where you guys are, you know, in the studio shooting portraits and you got your red Analog Talk t-shirt on.
Yeah,
it's like one
red,
of my one of my favorite videos. And it's your videos always too, they make you feel a part of it. Like I always feel like I'm not watching it, like I'm with you. Like it's you're such a great, I said it earlier, you're such a great storyteller. You're really good at what you do too. Like
thank you.
I don't know, man. You're
onto something.
Yeah, and just like I love the videos too, where it's like we're gonna, you know, stick Polaroid Go film in a 35mm camera. Yep. It's like, because that is that's the brains we have. Like,
right.
If you just,
what do we do it at Policon? We were doing.
Oh yeah, at Policon we were putting 35mm strips of film into SX70s. Yeah. And shooting like mosaics with film strips across.
I mean,
in,
come on.
Like dark tents in a backyard. Mm-hmm. It was.
And we're also doing like Polaroid Go, trying to make them like
mosaics. Oh, yeah. We're also doing Gozaics. We were taping Gozaics. Polaroid. Yeah. TM, trademarked. We were taping rows of Polaroid Go images inside 8x10 holders and taking these like gigantic Polaroid Go mosaics.
Man.
It's just like once you learn, you can never stop learning, obviously, but once you've sort of learned the fundamental base layer of like everything that exists, you start to, your brain starts to fill in gaps that aren't supposed to be there.
Yeah.
You start doing stuff you're not supposed to be doing. But the joy of like pushing forward is just like, and when you find people who also want to do that, that's where it really kicks off. Because like Abel is my friend from Seattle, who every time we're together, I feel like Abel's first question is like, what have you been thinking of wanting to do?
Let's just try it.
Yeah. He says, how can we push humanity forward this weekend? Like he came over for like our Thanksgiving or something this year. And he was like, what have you been just wanting to do? And I'm like, I've been wanting to drain all the chemistry out of a pod and put different chemistry in it and see what would happen. And we made like reclaimed green 8x10s.
Wow. Oh my God.
And that's the kind of people where it's just like, all right. We're not only love the same thing, we're friends forever now, and we're going to keep doing weird stuff.
I love it.
See, that's you know? One of my favorite parts of analog or film photography in general, is like, you can get so gritty with it. Like, it's real, you know, it's so real. You can cut the pods open on a Polaroid, scoop it into something else, use this format to do that. You know,
that's crazy.
I just love it so much because I don't know. I have that tinkerer brain too, like where I just want to figure something out and like do something different. And it
scratches so many itches. Yes. It's like you're like engineering a little bit. You're doing arts and crafts a little bit. You're taking a photo too. You're doing lighting stuff. Like, it's like scratching everything that you could ever really be curious about in one go. And maybe it pushes humanity forward. Maybe it's setting humanity back. But I'm having fun. So it's like hard to not do it.
So good. So where do you see this series turning into? Is it only going to live on in an instant? Or do you have plans to like put it all, make it like an hour and a half long?
I was struggling initially with trying to figure out what it was going to be because like I said, we kind of got out there. I had this PDF that they love PDFs out there. I had a PDF with just everyone we were going to meet, all the stuff we were going to see. And I was like, wow, this is a really random assortment of things. Hey. Like, I don't know how this becomes an instant episode in the end. And as we started going, I was just percolating the entire time. How am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? We're recording hours and hours of footage. This is going to take me months and months and months, which it did, to edit.
I believe it.
One day I just sat down and I just put everyone at, like, once I got back, put everyone's name in a Photoshop thing. And I just started dragging them around and seeing like, okay, what conversation did I have with this person? How did it relate to this topic? And I found three kind of buckets. So the first episode ended up being this like 30-minute exploration of the history of Chinese cameras, the history of the very notion of photography in China, and how that's evolved over time. And it's a very interesting history. The second episode was like the Polaroid centric one. It's like, what, you know, what is happening with Polaroid over here? Clearly something's popping off.
Yeah.
And then the third episode, which is soon to come out, was all about the artists that we met whose trades are all like preservation, like preserving Chinese culture. A lot of Chinese culture has been destroyed over the years.
Yeah.
And so there's these people out there that are practicing these forms of opera that like almost went extinct. And I met a ton of them and like all over the place, and like calligraphers and dancers. And I ended up like finding that bucket was its own thing. So I have these three separate pieces sort of that are episodes now, but realizing once I finished, which I actually just finished today, right before we recorded,
congrats.
I finished the third episode. Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's almost a somber feeling almost, because like the journey is a little over. But I'm realizing I have 90 minutes.
Wow. Here.
Like I have a feature film here. And I obviously went into making it for the audience that would be on YouTube. So I spoke about things that like Joe Schmo watching this in a movie theater would be like, what the hell is a PCB board?
Sure.
What is an SX70? So I have to think about that. But I do plan to somehow congeal it into a feature film.
Yeah.
And it, you know, submit it to festivals. I think I owe myself that just because the amount of time I spent on this.
100%.
Initially, the amount of time I was spending on it was like disquieting me. I was like, a lot of time is passing. I you know, obviously didn't get paid to do any of this. I'm dedicating so much time to that. You know, I didn't make an In an Instant episode for like 6 months or something because I was just like underwater on ChinaCon.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Wow.
It was a YouTube desert, but... Once I got the first episode in the bag, I realized this was absolutely worth it. And, you know, whatever this ends up being in terms of viewership, it's like worth it for myself just to have a document of this that I'll have for the rest of my life. And something that I hoped YouTube could be just for myself, my own selfish purposes, was a document of myself, like something that my kids could watch one day and be like, oh my God, here's dad in COVID era talking about the Mint RF70. And here he is in China and here he is in Switzerland and here he is in the Netherlands and here he is in Italy. And like hoping that I don't really vlog, so to speak. So it's not really like that, but hoping to at least make something that's like a slice of myself that it can exist in perpetuity. And that was always sort of a goal of mine as a filmmaker to begin with. Was like to make something that will endure in some way, even if it's about a camera, even if it's about a topic that might not, you know, change society. It at least is a part of me that is living out there, that even if I die tomorrow via some sort of crazy accident that is unexplained.
Don't you dare.
This stuff will be out there on YouTube and maybe in theaters soon.
I mean, good for you for not getting like bogged down by it all, because lots of times you just get overwhelmed, like, I can't do it. I can't.
Yeah. I almost threw my hands in the air a couple times, but.
Yeah, that hardest part of me, I mean, obviously you're an editor, so it's different, but thank you for seeing it through to the end, because that sounds like quite the feat.
Yeah. There was one moment where I posted a picture or something from China, and Birgit texted me, like, how's it going with the China stuff? And I was like, I don't know. I'm like really running out of steam here. And I'm like, oh, this is taking me way too long. And she's like, this is your responsibility. This is what you owe to the world.
Yeah.
You went out there and you filmed it. You got to finish it.
Yeah.
And like hearing that, I was like, okay, you're right. Like, I just need to wrap in and just buckle down.
Wow.
And get through it. The thing that took, it took weeks just going through the footage. That was the main time consuming thing was doing the selects process, finding the moments in the interviews, which are all in Chinese. I'm using AI translation to bring it into English. The translation's weird. I'm having people in China translate it back just to pick out sound bites, and then going through the B-roll. And that took a very long time.
Damn.
Once I had all of that and I had all these little like clips and all these little moments, that was when I kind of could take the paintbrush and actually make the painting.
Like zoom
and
out.
That's where things accelerated really rapidly, and I got really excited really quickly because I wasn't just sitting on this stuff anymore. I was actually making it, and I'm really proud of it. Like I don't normally feel this proud of much. I mean, I get excited about the stuff I do, but it's a different thing to be excited and another thing to feel like pride.
Wow.
And I actually feel proud about this and that like we actually did something. And I think as like filmmakers, as photographers, as people, we want to chase things that are fresh and we want to make something that like is fresh to people and hasn't been seen before. And it's really hard to do that. Like the internet age has created this saturation of content that everything feels like it's been done. Everyone is trepidatious about making something because it feels like it's been done. And I had this like rare opportunity to see something that kind of wasn't done before, at least within our little world. And that felt like something worth, you know, pushing all the way through on.
Totally. And we're happy to shine a light on it because, you know, people could be like, oh, well, yeah, Ben's in China, like, but he was just in Germany. So like, whatever, I'm not going to click into it. Like, no, like click into it, you know,
different.
It's a little different.
Yeah, this is boots on the ground. Yeah. This is like Vice Media on in a war zone. Yeah.
Right.
Except with really friendly and welcoming Chinese people.
Man.
I can't wait to check the whole thing out. It sounds incredible.
Man.
Is this like fueled you for like the next big thing? Are you happy with this for now and you're going to go back to like the interviews and reviews?
That's a great
question. Or are you like, all right, else can I go explore?
Yeah. In an instant, close it off.
Yes.
That's a serious finale of In an Instant. That's a great question because it was funny when I got to finishing these videos and then like this new Instax Evo camera's coming out. And I'm like, okay, so the next episode after this is an Instax Evo review. Okay, let me just get excited about doing that.
Yeah.
But I realized, like, I'm still excited about doing that. And my wife didn't come with me on this trip to China in large part because it was kind of like a work trip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You needed a break. Sorry, we got it.
Yeah. it would have killed most people, the processes we were going through. I mean, it was really insane and really intense. And so when I got back, she was like, oh, what's a more relaxing version of this? And so we were like, we should go to Japan. And so next month, I'm going to Japan and I'm going to make an In an Instant episode out there. And it's certainly not going to turn over any stones in the way that like the China series did. But to your question, Chris, about sort of wanting to keep doing this kind of thing.
Yeah.
That definitely is motivating me to continue. And seek more opportunities to, I think, be more internationally minded and be more globally minded, because I think it's very easy in the US, to Tim's point earlier, like you can have this American centric mind and like, yes, Kodak is here, but Polaroid's not here.
Right.
Many of the major innovations in the industry are happening in Europe and lo and behold, China.
Yeah.
And so there's so much more to see and certainly getting exposed to a completely different culture, and I'd never been to Asia before, and let alone you know this country, and it's totally changed my life, honestly, and just changed my perspective on the planet and wanting to be a guy who's doing these things and like meeting these people and no longer thinking of this space as or this community as my local Brooklyn community
here at
Brooklyn Film Camera for a gallery opening. Mm-hmm. No, I can be in Japan. I can be in China. I can be in India. I could be in all of these places that are completely foreign and yet very connective. And so I think that is sort of my mission going forward, is to try to keep doing this however I can. It's obviously expensive. And this was a very fortunate thing because Jesse invited me and we got to stay in this like free apartment. And so like we saved money in a lot of ways that would have really kind of crippled us going forward, but hopefully there's other couches to sleep on, maybe other countries and other people willing to host. So I definitely want to keep doing this somehow.
Thank the heavens. It almost sounds like for some reason while you were talking about that right there, it just reminded me of the old pullback, like when the astronauts see the Earth. And it's like one of those things of where it's like, oh, wow, this is just a small little rock that we live on, that we're all like, I wish we could all kind of have that experience. And, you know, it's because I think it would make us a whole lot.
I completely agree. Lot better. I mean, I was very, and still am, of course, very passionate about traveling within the United States and you know, photographically speaking, that is like my main interest, is like exploring the crevices of the US, these bygone areas that you can document before they disappear on Polaroid 8x10 or whatever. And now I'm like, wow, that was cool. And it still is. And I still really care about that. But I'm like, ooh, there is so much more to this onion than the initial skin I was peeling back. And it's definitely like created a new itch that I didn't realize I had. Mm. And now I feel like I got to scratch it. And I told Lauren when I got back, I was like, I mean, we're obviously going to Japan now, but I was like, all right, this is our new mission. We have to just go much further. We have to push much further than I was doing before. And I feel like activated, and I'm like reading world news. I'm like engaging with content I never would have really cared that much about.
Wow.
I'm watching like local Chinese like news coverage.
Yes.
I'm like, what the hell am I doing? But I'm genuinely interested in it. I have to keep, you know, I have to keep pursuing
this. Yeah, your friend's there now, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense. Now I care about what those homies are up to and what's happening to them.
Dude, I'm so glad though. Like, think about it. You know, what, 5-6 years later, mm-hmm. you just get this, like, burst, and it's new again, and you have that you know, that lust for life, lust for creativity, lust for I mean it's just I love when that happens. I mean, there's nothing better than inspiration, and like
totally,
it's like a drug.
It's 100% a drug. I mean, it's yes
it is, and especially with regard to like YouTube, which is this like burnout central thing where like it's so easy to just flame out making YouTube videos. They take so long to make. It feels like stressful to make them sometimes. I thought by now on year six, I mean, I didn't think that in an instant would be done or anything, but I thought I'd be like kind of sparingly touching it at this point. And to have a reactivation of inspiration like this was really unexpected. And, you know, I was a filmmaker first when I first started the channel, and and now it's like really scratching that itch. I mean, really like putting me in filmmaker mode, and maybe young Ben's journalism mode. And again, like, yeah, it's genuine inspiration, which you wouldn't think in year six of doing something like this that you'd still want to sit down in front of the camera and do it. And, I still want to sit down in front of the camera and do it. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of how we feel about this show. You know, life has, you know, we don't come out as frequently as more as we used to because of like life and career and kids and stuff like that. But we, every time we sit down and do it, we, it's like day one or two. Like, we're like, yes, like every time we get to come back to it and talk to, you know, people like you who we share this passion for this crazy thing, we are re-energized. So we, you know, and we're not going anywhere and kind of feel like that's how you feel with this newfound inspiration. It's just like, it keeps, it's still good. It still hits, it's still like, we, like, it. I mean, I've said this before, like, photography has been like the constant thing in my life, you know, like.
North Star.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the right thing.
And I feel that about the show as a listener, like the, you'd think, you know, this many, I don't know how long All Out Talk's been on, but it's been like, what, nine years or something?
Yeah.
9 years. That's crazy. That's a lot of episodes. You'd think maybe as a listener, it would become, you know,
fatiguing.
You've heard it all before.
Yeah.
But everyone that comes on the show is bringing this injection of inspiration. And so you kind of get the kick in the butt every time you listen to it.
I mean, that's why we keep doing it, because we hang up and we're like, damn, I'm ready to go. Let's go.
Yeah,
like, it's like so good. And to hear you say that, you know, from a listener standpoint, we really hope that it, we resonate some way or another. And because we're gonna keep doing it, whether we, you know,
can't stop me now.
It's just that, like we said, that love of the game, you know?
Yeah, love the game. We love putting that jersey on. We love putting the cleats on. We love lacing it up and getting out there.
Damn right.
We're not retiring anytime soon.
There's so many people, like for us, for our show, like, we have so many people still to talk to. Like, there's so many people doing really cool stuff. I mean, case in point, like all over the world.
Yeah, totally. I mean, your valve is sort of never going to seal up.
And I remember when we started, we're like, we're going to run out of people, I think. And we're like, no way. Like,
yeah, I mean, to think of when you started and this like re-energization of the industry and the amount of new souls that got shoved into this thing and started doing all their own crazy things. The universe has expanded. And as we all know, the universe is rapidly expanding in all directions. And so you end up having this never-ending source of people and inspiration and expanding throughout the world. So maybe we'll get Analog Talk China started up.
Sign me up. It just makes me think in the infant stages, or even 5 years ago or something, we were always like speculating and like, what's going to happen to Polaroid and instant film? Yeah. And it was the Impossible Project, Polaroid Originals, and then it was the then the i2 comes out, and then you hear they're building another factory, and then come on, like thank you that we all kind of banded together and got this thing going again. I mean, and thriving, it seems. I mean, they have a China branch. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, I know. It was actually funny to hear. That was something that I heard on the 2020 episode that was kind of funny, was we were treating the industry as if it was precarious because of the time it was. It hadn't yet really solidified in the way that it is now. This reformation of the industry that had to happen, and Kodak had to, you know, restructure, and Polaroid was in the middle of a lot of change. And, you know, the factory in Germany that makes like Lomography film and stuff like that hadn't yet really found its way. And it's funny now to look back on that and think that the film photography industry, this like borderline defunct thing, is now its own thing.
Yeah.
It's now its own industry.
Like from the ashes.
Yeah. And it's really divorced from the burden of being like not digital. It's now just a completely separate industry with its own players and its own market and its own customers. It's no longer fighting for the audience that it needed. It's like there, and thankfully there's some rich people involved.
Thank you, rich people.
Yeah.
So shout out to rich people. If there's any more out there and you're listening to this, there's plenty more companies that need your support.
Yeah.
The money helps. So we're not there yet. We need your cash. Yep.
But I mean, think about like everything that Ilford is doing. Like they're starting. Yeah. With their Phoenix film, like they're like, we're gonna make color film from scratch. We're like, wait, what?
Yeah, you know? Totally.
And Kodak coming like, we're back and we're gonna give you film and like Polaroid and doing all these. We're gonna make a new camera, Lomography made. And, I mean, all these people are like,
dude, that new Lomo camera, come on.
I mean, the Lomo camera. Yeah. I'm so mad. God, I missed
don't
the
get me started
the,
on the MCA.
My biggest regret. I didn't buy that for myself for Christmas.
yeah, Christmas 2026. The fact that at the time Fuji was sort of starting to shutter their film stocks, and they still have, and obviously they're making Instax and it's successful, but at the time there was really only one reliable color film manufacturer of color negative film, and it was Kodak.
Yeah.
And Polaroid was a little precarious at the time. They're obviously making color film.
Yeah.
Now there's Ilford that is making new color film. There's Lucky Film in China, which is making color film. The color film was at risk of essentially going extinct.
Yeah.
It was in the hands of one company that kept making huge mistakes and like nearly going bankrupt every 2 years.
Yeah.
And now, thankfully, not that I feel like safe, but there is at least a safety net of like three or four independent color film manufacturers and more to come.
Thank the heavens.
Yeah.
Preach.
Next, we need camera companies. We need people building cameras. We really do. We really do.
Yeah. Shout out to Lomo for even, going out on a leg with the MCA. I mean, chef's French kiss. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I have all these point and shoots that they've just kaput.
Yeah, they combust.
Yeah, they really just will like stop working. And to know that you can buy like a brand new point and shoot that seems to be solid.
Yeah.
And know that you can be like, I mean, it's a dream. It happened.
The dream.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with listener question for Ben right after this message from our sponsor.
This message is brought to you by the Capital One Venture X card. Venture X offers the premium benefits you expect, like a $300 annual Capital One travel credit for less than you expect. Elevate your earn with unlimited double miles on every purchase, bringing you one step closer to your next dream destination. Plus, enjoy access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. The Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Just wanted to pop in here quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. Now, we've done a bunch of these already. They're a ton of fun. We talk shop. We develop some film. We laugh. We also try to get former guests for these. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Patreon is the best way to support the show. Thanks.
All right, everybody. This is the part of the show where we take a question from one of our listeners. This week's question comes from Tom Perez Bourne, and they want to know, if you could interview Edwin Land, oh my God, and could only ask three questions, what will you ask?
Oh my gosh.
You're the perfect person to ask this question to, obviously.
Yeah, Eddie. So Edwin Land, the founder of Polaroid. I'll be sobbing for the first probably 10 minutes.
Right.
He'll be trying to console me, but, you know. He's a man of science, so he probably doesn't have, you know, that many emotions to provide. So I've always kind of wondered, I've thought about this before because, you know, I thought if we could bring him back for 10 minutes, what would I be able to ask him? So the first thing I'd really, really be curious about was his initial vision of instant film And his concept of what instant imagery would bring to the world, it ended up being Polaroid. But now we live in this world where, you know, the iPhone exists, digital yeah. cameras exist, instant imagery is ubiquitous and common. I would ask him, do you like my iPhone? Do you like iPhone photography? Does this actually do the thing that you always dreamt of? Because in he has this video, The Walk, which a lot of people have seen.
Right, in the
and
pocket,
he's
right?
Off, he's yeah. walking you through the Polaroid factory that he's building, and he pulls out his wallet, and it looks like a phone, and it's this like great bit of Polaroid mythology where he's like, you'll take out your wallet, just any wallet, you'll press a button yeah. and have the picture, and it looks like an iPhone, and it's it makes crazy. You think, would he just have loved the iPhone? And so I'd be curious if film itself would carry any sort of prestige or weight to him, or whether as a scientist and thinker, he would be more engaged in the digital world than we expect.
Wow.
That would be one thing.
Yeah.
I would also wonder if I would ask him what he thought of Polaroid today and what he would think of the energy that so many people like us are putting into analog photography, and whether that's a worthy cause anymore as like a futurist himself. And the third question I would ask him is a bit of mythos that is sort of just part of the Polaroid origin story that no one really knows if it's true or not. Did his daughter really ask him that one fateful day why she can't see the pictures he was taking? Is that really what caused him to invent Polaroid?
Wow.
I hope he would lie and tell me the story is true because legendary.
It wasn't a publicist who was like, "This is we need a cute story
hey, Edmund,
to go
I've got
along
a great
with." Like,
story for
yeah,
you.
It has to be. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then hopefully he doesn't like die again immediately or something. I'm not really sure what are the conditions that brought him back, but hopefully they have some permanence.
Man. What a
I know,
what an innovator, man. Like
the GOAT, literally the GOAT.
And then that whole debacle with the Polaroid video, like that whole
The Polavision debacle. Polavision. I mean,
oh man.
The decline of I guess I would wonder whether he retroactively thought the direction the company went in was worth a damn.
Yeah.
Because they kicked him out at the peak of his innovative spirit, you know, the flame, where he came up with Polavision, he came up with instant movie film, and it ended up being a bust, but it was really like, it was still in line with his vision of the future and instant imagery and technology. And Polaroid, almost immediately after his departure, went in the direction of plastic cameras, and they basically never invented anything ever again.
Right.
And I'm sure that dismayed him tremendously. But I wonder if he would like the eye too. Would he be like into the current movement of trying to reinvent his film stock? Or would are you silly people still doing this?
No, I feel like, I don't know. Obviously who knows, but like that would have had to warm his heart. Like it almost went away. And then we all were like, it can't go away. Look at these beautiful cameras. Look at this.
Yeah.
We saved it. It was saved, which is an incredible thing. If you really think about it that way.
And in many ways it is the continuance of his legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Like Edmund Land probably would be completely forgotten had it not been for the revitalization of Polaroid. And Edmund Land was a great American inventor and came up with things like polarized glass, which is a term, polarized lenses and stuff that we throw around every day without even thinking that was Edmund Land's invention. He sort of would have been completely forgotten. In many ways, society has forgotten him, and we are like the last breath of Edmund's legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope he would admire it for that reason, at least, that we're keeping his spirit alive. And that the Impossible Project was basically created on the backbone of what if you could do something that was manifestly impossible, and that people told you couldn't do, which is what Edmund Land was told his whole life until he did it anyway. And that's the spirit of Polaroid that I still try to keep with me, even though I'm burned through shots and can buy a pack of Target. I still picture how precious it is.
I love that the cassettes still say impossible on them too. I love it.
I hope they never change that.
Nah, same here.
Did you read the book? The book.
I did.
Yeah. I mean,
that was incredible.
I mean, the story about the car accident with the headlights, and he was like, "That's where the polarizing idea came from," and they're like, "It can't be done." Like,
yeah, no, totally. And the book gets really. This I can't remember what it's called. It's like The Invention of Genius or something.
Yeah, it needs to be a movie.
Yeah, it needs to be a movie first. Well, yeah. Okay. just yeah. a quick aside,
yeah.
a dream project of mine is sort of Edwin Land biopic. Yes.
We are on the crew. We already said it. Universe. Okay.
You guys are in.
Whatever you need.
All right. So you're hired.
Yeah.
I literally daydream about this in the car all the time. I think Jeff Daniels would be a funny Edwin Land. Oh, he kind of looks like him.
And all right. We're going to write the script.
I have this idea that would be kind of from the book, which is like Edwin Land's final years. Mm-hmm. And it's very compelling to me that he was basically discarded by Polaroid, the very company he created, you know, living off of the ideas that he came up with. And his final years were spent in court defending his legacy, which is like kind of cinematic in many ways.
100%.
Like, yeah. 100%. They were suing Kodak for ripping them off. And all he did was go in every day against his own like doctor's advisement. And anyone around him was like, why are you killing yourself over this? Mm-hmm. He went in there every day to defend the patents that he developed, the technology that he created. And like, I think there's something there as like maybe a movie. So
100%.
Let's put a pin in that.
Yes.
But we will revisit it.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, screaming for it. It's
I'm screaming right now.
We're all screaming. We're screaming
we've
together.
We've screamed for Ice Cream. Now we're screaming for the Edwin Land biopic.
Yes.
What do you think? I mean, it's probably the answer is money, but what do you think the reasoning behind not making, like, one of these companies, Fuji, Lomo, Polaroid, not making the camera we're asking for? Like, we're all asking for that.
Yeah.
What's the beef? Like, why?
Yeah, like, why don't we have an SX-70? Yes. Or SX-71?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's definitely a cost limitation. Like, I think it can be done. The SX-70 can be presently deconstructed, and you can look at how every component fits within itself and how it's made. And in fact, there is a company in China right now called like 10 Art CC or something that is developing a folding SLR Instax Mini, Instax Square camera modeled directly off the SX-70.
Hell yeah.
And I think that's so badass. Mm-hmm. And if they actually do it, because everyone's doubting, there's only renderings right now. I think they can do it. If anyone can do it, it's Chinese production manufacturing. They have the ability. I think it will be a great, like, not F you, but like F the doubters who and the people who didn't pick themselves up and just figure out how to do it. Because I think the idea that it's not possible is just a mental limitation.
Right.
And maybe a cost limitation. But if the Chinese manufacturing market and this company is able to do this within Stack Square, I think it will be like a real kick in the pants. And hopefully at least Polaroid takes their lead and maybe adapts it. Fuji, sadly, has seemingly no interest in making anything of any particular quality. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I could go on for ages about that, but I won't.
We all have for so long. Yeah. Like, it's just
I'm sparing them speech right now, but
it always makes me sad. And I mean, I get it. We have all these people that are building chips for the SX-70 there's a whole new breath of life breathed into these things, and that's awesome because there's a million of these things floating around out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's just weird that nobody is taking on the challenge. I mean, there's people, you see renders online of so-and-so's 3D printing this and that. And it's like, that's great. But like, where's that big innovation? Like, I feel like now's the time. If we don't do it now, like, I don't think it's ever going to happen. I really don't.
Yeah. I mean, it's I think, you know, the market is somewhat limited. The i2 is really impressive that camera ended up existing. Because Polaroid didn't have to do that. And I know it took them years to even be able to develop that, which just goes to show how difficult it is to make a camera.
Right.
And the i2 is really impressive. And I think it can compare to the SX-70, but there's still something uniquely special and undefeated about the SX-70 and the folding nature of it and the SLR nature of it. And, you know, you see companies like Nans, which I don't know if you guys are that familiar, but they've made SLRs. Like, they're making SLR Instax cameras. So there's some people out there fighting the good fight. Hopefully, that just keeps growing.
Hopefully, Polaroid does it next. That'd be like the...
Yeah, because they've got the money and they've got the wherewithal. And I do think they have the intelligence and, like, the brain power to do it. Mm-hmm. I know their engineers there. Like, I've come to know them, and I know what they're motivated to do. I mean, they brought sonar autofocusing back.
Yeah.
Like, I never would have thought they were going to do that. The first video I ever released on In an Instant was about the miracle of sonar autofocusing, which was the very first autofocusing technology ever put into an SLR camera. Polaroid invented that. And they just dropped it. You know, when Impossible came back, understandably, it's kind of an antiquated technology. But the fact that they were able to do that again shows me that they do have that spark of they want to reach back into history and maybe pull stuff back out. So hopefully that comes back. Hopefully Spectre comes back. Hopefully Fuji makes Instax tall. Well, there's a lot of options out there.
Yeah. Whenever they're ready.
Yeah. Whenever you're ready. I'm waiting for Instax 8x10. Whenever they're ready. Whenever they're ready.
Damn. That would be special. Holy shit.
That would kill.
Oh, man. All right. Hit them with the camera questions.
Okay. All right. This is the part of the show. I know.
It's been a while.
Okay. So ready for the big question here. You're on a desert island. If you had to pick one camera for the rest of your life, what would it be? And why? And I'm wondering if it's changed since last time we talked
to you. Okay. So one of the things I was really interested in listening to the first episode was, what did I say? So it's really weird what I said. And I almost, I'm like, what was I thinking? I said the Pentax 6.7, which not a bad choice, but like I said that I liked the larger negative size. I don't know why I was limiting myself to medium format there, because now when I think about what I would want to have on a desert island, I'm alone, I'm scared, there's a smoke monster, there's a doctor and the Dharma Initiative and all these things. Mm-hmm. What would I want to shoot all these incredible things with? It would be an 8x10 camera, for sure.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
That makes sense. My caveat there is, I don't know exactly what brand I would want it to be, because it would have to be some mega durable, probably like war-tested industrial 8x10 camera, because all that salt and all that sand,
sure,
that is begging for a disaster and holes in my bellows.
Well, we always say it's a magic island, so.
Well, that's true. It is a magic island. I mean, we have Jacob there. I mean, I could probably have them magically summon me new bellows if I needed to.
Yeah.
But I think I would go 8x10, because it's a slow process. Mm-hmm. I'm living out my last remaining days on this place, and what am I doing? I may as well be shooting large format and trying to like rip insane LF shots of waterfalls and trees and new species of animals. And I think I would go 8x10.
That's what you shoot when you're not shooting Polaroid, right? It's pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, essentially that is what I normally do. So it would be a wonderful contemplative time to spend continuously refining my 8x10 stuff. And I would basically, every few months, there's a dark room on the island, as we know. I would make prints. I would build a little raft. I'd write a note. Hey, it's me. I'm stuck on this island. It's kind of sucks. Like, I don't know north from south right now, but here's some prints, some bangers in here. Go ahead, make a photo book. Here's my coordinates. And just sort of send it out. And maybe it'll reach someone in Tahiti. Maybe it won't. But at least I'd be publishing my work. You know, maybe it won't reach anyone. But my plan, at least. My tentative plan on the island.
It's beautiful. It's a good plan.
Yeah, I'm trying to get into large format myself over here, and I'm struggling.
No, you got it. I think I was with you the first day you pulled out your
interrupter. Yeah, that was like the last time until this recent time, and then I've tried to use it. Yeah,
there was some trauma that day. I remember some of the sheets were exposed weirdly.
Yeah, that's what the problem is. I always somehow mess it up, and then it's like so hard to work yourself back up to like try again.
It's really traumatic. I mean, some of my first really effed up large format stuff, I remember just feeling the like worst pit in my stomach and just thinking, oh my God, I spent a lot of time on one picture and I screwed up the one picture.
Yeah, like, it's disheartening.
But then when you get that one,
I know.
You get that one.
Mm. I did get one from that day. It's Rafa and Kat, and it's like one of my favorites. And that's what always like get, if I'm like, let me just.
And especially with large format, the reps are everything. It's like the mistakes you make are the learning moments of, well, I'll never do that again.
Right.
I'll never double expose the sheet again. I'll never accidentally load two sheets into one holder again. I'll never, you know, everything you do, you make the mistake maybe once or twice, but that's sort of, now I feel, it's looking back on the first times I was shooting large format, I remember all these things are sort of traumatic, but they made me into the version of myself I am now.
Right. It's true.
So we must push forward.
Second part of the question, is there any camera that you have your eye on right now? What does your eBay history look like right now?
My eBay watch list is currently a bloodbath. I also, just a shout out to my previous answer from 2020. I had said the Mamiya Universal Press or the Goop, the 600 SE. Mm-hmm. It couldn't have been more than 2 weeks after that episode that I bought the freaking thing. So
hell yeah.
as you can see, I'm sort of trying to self-realize my wishes here. Currently, I have two cameras that are on my white whale list that have been on there for years now, and I have not taken the plunge. So the first, they're both completely interrelated, the 10X 2 and the Mamiya Sketch. So these are both 24 by 24 centimeter, 35 millimeter square format cameras, of which there are very few, you know, of that kind. Famously, like the robot cameras, if you guys have ever seen those, those were square shooting cameras, but very intricate mechanically and very prone to failure. But the 10X 2 was made by Zeiss, and it was made at a time when everyone was trying to come up with the next thing that will get people really interested. So the conceit of that camera was that it had a rapid winder and it shot square format. So you're getting like 50 something frames per roll. And every time you take the picture, when you depress the shutter, it's one continuous motion and it advances the frame as you've hit the shutter. So it's got a shutter and a winder combined motion. And so you can be like, boom, 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 boom. You can take photos really quickly. I wouldn't want it for that feature, but I would want it because I'm a square format guy. I shoot Polaroid. I'm obsessed with square format. It's always kind of bummed me out that there aren't 35 millimeter cameras that do that.
Yeah.
Like, why are there so many half-frame cameras that shoot vertical images but not square? Especially in the Instagram age, back when, you know, Instagram was square.
Yeah.
The Mamiya Sketch is a simpler version, probably more realistic and less expensive, but it's still like $500 for one of these things.
Holy crap.
It has a 35 millimeter 2.8 lens, which I love. A lot of cameras, a lot of fixed lens cameras from back then were 50 mil, which is a little too much for me, compressed-wise. So the Mamiya Sketch, I have this dream of going to Japan next month and walking into one of these stores and seeing a Sketch for however much yen is to the US dollars and thinking, I'm finally going to do this. I'm finally going to make the mistake of committing to this. And so maybe next time I'm on the show in 6 years, I will have bought the Mamiya Sketch in Japan. Hopefully. We'll see. Right now, I did check. There's only one on eBay. So that's how rare it is. Very rare. So,
doesn't that give you anxiety where you're like, I got to buy the one?
Yeah, it's does. It
like
certainly
anytime
does.
It pops up, I'd be like, I'm it just going to do
it. It certainly does make me almost make a mistake. I'm taking the plunge and never looking back. But we'll see. But those are my white whales right now.
Love it.
Japan's going to be wild. It's like camera.
The camera vibes out there.
Chaos
are gonna be ridiculous.
In Japan.
I know.
The markets are going to be stimulus overload.
I might have to send a couple bags of cash your way to pick me up something while you're...
I've got a filmmaker that I've tapped to help me shoot an episode where... We're trying to figure out like how precarious it is to walk into, you know, Japan's culture is very different than China's culture. In China, you can kind of, everyone just wants to say hi to you. I mean, it's a very like friendly culture. Wow. Whereas Japan is a lot more reserved. So we don't know whether we're just going to like walk into these camera markets and start shooting and buy a Mamiya Sketch and go crazy. It might be a little bit more touchy than that, but we'll see. Hopefully, you know, next time we talk, I will be... have made more content in Asia and own a square shooting 35 millimeter camera. How about that?
Here's to that. I'm ready.
Cheers.
Ben, this has been incredible catching up. We are beyond excited and proud of,
proud.
We're all the things you're doing for the community. We love to see it. We can't wait for more. We hope, just all the things. We're so happy for you. Where can everybody check out the show, the new documentary series? Plug it.
Yeah, we be plugging. You can go to youtube.com/inanInstant. I am also on Instagram at the.instantgram. My website is fraternally.com. If you shoot a Polaroid bat signal into the sky, I will materialize. If you send me an email inviting me to your foreign country, I will materialize. I will be there, and I will be square, proudly.
I
love that. So good. Timothy, where are you?
Guys, I'm back on Instagram at Timothy Makeups.
Hey!
Started posting. It's pretty cool. I'm going to do a peel every Monday, like a series of my peel aparts, because I have, I think I counted them again. I have almost 2,000 peels that I've
never really
shared. So So I'm going to do that, and I'm going to batch them in, and it's a whole thing. I'm excited. I'm excited to share. Yeah, it's cool. So at Timothy Makeups, it automatically sends it over to Threads too, so I'm on there. A bunch of crusty stuff on the YouTube. You can find that there. Go to the search bar, Timothy.Makeups, Timothy.Makeups.com. Buy one of my books or zines. That would help a lot. Chris, where are you?
I am Crispy Photo on mostly all the things. Instagram, YouTube, that's where I'm at. We are Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram and Threads.
And you're Crispy in my phone contacts.
I don't need to access my phone contacts. I was just having the memory of when we did a develop and hang, and when I was pregnant. Yeah. And you're like, oh, for a name, like Ben would be great. And I was like, well,
that was like we're doing it.
I forgot about that. That's right.
The amount of stuff that's happened.
Dude, crazy.
Including childbirth. I mean, my God. Yep. Producing more people named Ben in this world.
Yep.
Doing the Lord's work.
So good. Well, Ben, thank you very much. Thank you all for listening. And we'll see you in the next one. Bye, guys.
Bye.
All right, first off, Chris and I would love to thank Ben for coming back on the show. Man, it's like, you know, an old friend visits. It's such a good time. We had such a blast. Just outstanding what you're doing with the channel, what you're doing in life. You know, we're so proud, Ben. We absolutely love what you're doing. Guys, if you haven't checked out Ben's series, it's amazing. All three parts are up by now. So check out his China series. Ben, thanks so much. We love you. We are in love with you, and you're amazing, dude. We love you. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon development hang nights over there and a ton of stuff in the archive. Best way to find it, patreon.com/analogtalk. Like we always say, Patreon is the best way to support the show. We're back with a new season. We're so excited. We can't, you know, we love doing this. This fills our hearts. It's the best thing ever. We love this podcast. We love the listeners. We love our guests. It's just so much fun. It's the best all the time. Guys, thanks for tuning in and listening. Thanks for making it to the end. And we'll see you in a couple weeks with an all new episode. All right. Yay, new season. See you soon, guys. Later.
This message is brought to you by the Capital One Venture X card. Venture X offers the premium benefits you expect, like a $300 annual Capital One travel credit for less than you expect. Elevate your earn with unlimited double miles on every purchase, bringing you one step closer to your next dream destination. Plus, enjoy access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. The Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.